You say we don't know. We say we don't know. We say Drek this out.
I'm the doctor.
So should we just go for it then?
Yes. Sorry. Oh, that's okay. Go on, lad.
I was waiting for a Debbie interruption, to be honest.
You expect that later.
Okay, here we go then. Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of Trek This Out.
True.
Yep.
True. There you go.
Hello.
Hi there, Debs.
Well, you said hello to everybody. I just hadn't had a chance to say hello back. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for reminding me to interrupt.
That's okay. It wouldn't be the same. I hope we've got some Jason Isaac news coming up as well at some point.
Pushing it a bit.
Yeah. He's probably on his Christmas holidays.
Oh, Sookie's interrupting now. Blimey, you're getting in on
it. Well, I thought it was a traditional thing to do. Everybody else is doing it, so I want to join in.
Will you all behave yourselves?
Oh, my God, who is that? Who is that?
I've come back to keep you in line.
I know, it's gone to chaos, hasn't it? Blimey, without your...
True, you're supposed to be in charge. Sort it out.
Right, okay. So, this week, we are once again... ploughing into different fields because we're not doing Star Trek, we're doing Doctor Who and the Christmas special, which is called The Church on Ruby Road.
What is a coincidence but a form of accident? Two things bumping together unexpectedly. Like you and me.
No, but who are you? Why are you an expert in time-travelling goblins?
They are not time-travellers. Excuse me. Time-travellers are great. Like, the best. Like, wow. This lot just bimble.
So if they're bimbling, why did they pick on Davina McCall?
Oh, that was just fun.
Wait, how did you do that?
I spent a long, hot summer with Harry Houdini.
So, this week, we are, once again, the Fab Four, back again. After 50 years, almost, they're back together to put a single on. But it's John Lennon. He's the leader of the band. That's Sookie.
That's me. Don't you forget it.
We've got Paul McCartney on the bass, the one that everyone swoons over. That's Andrea.
Hello.
We've got George Harrison, the enigmatic real talent of the band. That's Debbie.
Hello.
And, of course, Ringo on the drums. That's me, Drew. Love and peace. So, was we going to get some, because obviously we've sorely missed Andrea for the last few. Was we going to get some reviews of the last three Doctor Who episodes?
Yep, we can. I've watched them all quite excitedly. I think I sit in a funny place because I think at the time I loved David Tennant. I loved in particular with Billy Piper. And when I've watched them back, I don't know if I love them quite as well. I don't know if they've aged quite as well. It was a bit like, oh, I don't. I remember this being better than it was. But I really enjoyed all three specials. I think they were all different. I think they all gave something. I remember when they announced Catherine Tate was going to be the companion, I kind of went, really? And I was really pleasantly surprised by her, I think, in that role. So I was really pleased to see her back. I was really pleased to see her get a good resolution. I don't know how I feel about the whole regeneration thing. It felt like a little bit of a cop-out to me. And it's like, well, we'll just keep David around in case we need him for the ratings, which I don't know how I feel about that, but he's kind of sitting there. I kind of feel like that curator kind of line, where he was kind of playing with that storyline a little bit, that he's kind of sitting around twiddling his thumbs on Earth with nothing much to do. And I'm sure we're probably going to see him at some point, but I kind of hope not for a long time, because I think we need to give this current run what it deserves, which is sort of everyone's full attention. I liked the Meep. I drew the Meep. I wanted it to remain cute. It didn't. I'm slightly fascinated who the boss is, because I feel like that thread was dangled and nothing was done with it. So I think that's coming back at some point. I like the middle episode, which was just, it was almost like a two-hander. I think they played that really well. I quite liked Jimbo the robot. I was going to draw him and didn't get around to it. So I think there was, something for everyone. And I think the final one, I think Neil Patrick Harris was everything I wanted from Neil Patrick Harris. He was at his campus finest, I think. So I've enjoyed all three of the other specials. And as I say, I think they were all very different, but I think they kind of gave you those RTD threads. And I think I'll come on to that later, because I think he's kind of, he gave us a little bit of it in the first one in particular, and I think he gave us a little bit of it in the Christmas special. So I'm not going to go into that too much, because I think that's going to cross over with this episode. But I was very happy with them all.
Excellent. Oh, there's some really good reviews there. Marvellous. And I totally agree with practically everything you said there. So, go on, Debs.
Yeah, no, it's just I can't believe I forgot to say it, and I haven't been shouting about this more. But Andrea, I had a theory, because I like Douglas Adams, that the end of the universe one was, you know, there should have been a restaurant, basically. And also the robot was actually Marvin, because he did look rather miserable. And also I was just doing the counts, Peter Davison, after 1, 2, 3, 4, Fifth Doctor. Yeah.
That's the count, yeah, on Fifth the fingers.
Doctor, well, should have appeared walking up the corridor offering, you know, his best side of meat for them. Anyway, I put this on a comment to Russell T. Davis, and he liked it. I got a like from Russell T. Davis on Instagram. And wow. I can't believe that I haven't been shouting about it. So I just wanted to get it in quickly. Andrea.
I was just going to say, if there was a restaurant at the end of the universe and it wasn't Clara's Diner, then I would have been very, very, very upset.
Oh, we're going to have a disagreement with you ladies about which version of the restaurant should be at the end of the universe. Douglas Adams or Clara's? No.
Okay. I just love the fact that Andrea's back. And so I'll agree with anything Andrea says. We can have both of them. We can have an annex.
100%. So should we move on to the episode of the week, the church on Ruby Road? Should we get some initial thoughts then? So Sue, we haven't heard much of Suki. Should we go to you for an initial thought?
Yeah, this is great, isn't it? Because normally I have to wait. And, you know, I'll do most of the talking sometimes, but unless I get it interrupted. But now I've got both Andrea and Deb on the podcast, I don't have to do that much talking, which is great. But yes, I did enjoy this episode. It was fun. It was frothy. It was light. But it had that moments of drama in there, especially when it suddenly went dark, when what's the name? Ruby Sunday suddenly vanished. And you saw the darkness in the two characters that were left behind. How they cope without this young lady being in their lives. So I really enjoyed this. The goblin bit, I could take it or leave you. It was all right for a Christmas episode. And I can't see, if it had been in a regular episode, I might have been a bit more critical about it. But in a Christmas episode, I can't see nothing wrong with it. So, yeah, it was a thumbs up from me.
Excellent. How about you, Debs?
I do have some deep and worrying concerns, which I need to bring up, which have bothered me since the episode. Cherry didn't get a cup of tea.
She did.
When? I didn't see her. I saw her get humbugs, but not get her a cup of tea.
She had a cup of tea.
Oh, okay. I'm happy then. I loved it.
Go. Andrea, how about yourself?
So Doctor Who Christmas specials are almost a sort of a unique part of the show, I think. And if I was judging it as a regular episode, I would probably look at it through quite different eyes. But I think the Christmas special, I always feel like they're designed for a different audience almost, because it's like whole family round the telly Christmas Day. It's got to be something for everyone. It's got to be very accessible. It's got to be light. It's got to be fun. So Christmas specials typically aren't my favourite episodes. So I'm going to judge it as a Christmas special. I thought it was decent. But if it had been a regular episode, I'd have probably been going, ooh, I don't know. But as a festive sort of event, I think it was okay.
But don't you see it as seeding a lot for the... I can't believe you've got to wait till May. But it was seeding a lot as well for the future, which excites me.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, I did think that. There's a lot of plot threads that have been put into motion here, and that which will continue on into the series. And normally, you find in a Christmas episode, there isn't that much. But I still found it fun and frothy, and you're light and whatever I was saying. But there is a lot of stuff that's been seeded here, which will go on to future episodes. Drew, what do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think for a Christmas episode, it was really good. I've certainly enjoyed this more than... We've not had Christmas ones, have we? We've had like New Year's Day ones recently. Definitely enjoyed it the most for a few years, the seasonal episode. But was it as good as a normal episode? Possibly not. It was good fun, let's say that. So yeah, let's go to a bit more in-depth now after we've had our initial thoughts. So let's go to the top of the episode. It starts off with Ruby's abandonment as a baby at the church, doesn't it? And then the doctor turning up in the TARDIS, which I think he's from later on in the episode, isn't it? Because he's crying at the beginning of the episode. So what do we think of this initial scene then? Because there's a narration over the top as well. Someone hooded, looks like a woman, dropping a baby off. I mean, there's a trope, isn't there, in time travel? If you don't see someone's face, then it's always the same person. It's Ruby dropping off baby Ruby, isn't it?
Yes, you're right there. This is what I've come around to that way of thinking. I initially thought it was the mother, but now I'm thinking that it is Ruby. And because I think when the 15th Doctor sees this woman walking away, and she's covered with the cloak only, but you do see the boots and the bottom of her legs, like basically. And he just recognises who that is because he's just been with Ruby Sunday. So he knows who that person is that's just dropped the baby off. So he must know. It's a bit of a timey-wimey situation, so he decides not to get involved, not to chase after her. That's what I've been thinking recently. I did initially think you somebody completely different. I mean, everybody's all had theories. The Rani, Mel, Donna, the 13th Doctor back again. There's all sorts of theories going out there. But I'm now coming to the idea that it is Ruby Sunday.
Go on, if it was the 13th Doctor, then he's got a cracking pair of pins on him, hasn't he? Because didn't look like men's legs to me under the cloak there.
Jodie's.
Oh, yeah, of course it is. Yeah. Oh, yes, of course. They're not going to bring Jodie back for that one scene, are they?
Well, you never know. There might just be a little cameo. But to be honest, I have got spoilers for this episode anyway, so I do know who that character might be.
I was just going to say, it's like, it's very typical, like sort of, and I think a lot of the episode for me felt very like RTD, kind of like, I'm going to fuck with the audience. I think, you know, let's put a woman in a cloak, dropping off a baby, like, ooh, who's that? And that kind of ties in with Mrs. Flood as well, which is another example of like him kind of like, I'm going to mess with you. And like the internet just eats it up, doesn't it? I mean, like, between them, we've got it's the Rani, it's the Master / Missy, Susan, Romana, Ruby but old, Ruby's mother, Ruby's a road mother, River Song, because she's called Mrs. Flood. Like, we just go mad, and it's probably going to turn out that it's none of these things. But I think we kind of like every time an unknown female character is seen on screen, it's like it's the Rani.
The only one person the one you just mentioned there that I do not think will be. He's going to be Ruby as her own mother. I don't think even Russell T Davies is going to go that direction.
But in other words, she's the mother dropping off the baby, kind of. It's like cyclical, isn't it? But I have seen that theory. There's all sorts of madness, but every time you see it, like an unknown female character, everyone goes, it's the Rani. Like, I don't know why everyone's obsessed with the Rani. Like, I don't think the Rani was that good a character, but everyone really wants them back, so...
There's a character coming up called the Duchess. Now, I initially thought that was the character was going to be the Duchess, as in like a Time Lord name. So it's a Time Lady, basically, and that was going to be played by Indira Verma. But now that I've seen the trailer that turned up at the end of the episode, which was Indira Verma as like a Regency character called the Duchess, I've now discounted all that Time Lord stuff. And I think she's just a character within that one story. So I don't think she's a traveling air lady.
Didn't Dirty Den call Sharon or Angie Duchess? I think that we're heading for a full EastEnders crossover.
I feel for kind of our international audience, I think it's quite important to explain that Mrs. Flood is played by Anita Dobson, who is Mrs. Brian May, if you're aware of Queen, but also had a key role in a British soap called EastEnders, which had some of the kind of the biggest Christmas Day scenes ever, the most watched, like her husband Den served her with like divorce papers, and it was watched by 25 million people or something crazy like that. So she is a bit of a Christmas institution. So I think she was cast for a Christmas special with probably a little bit of that in mind.
Best Christmas ever, Den.
Our last one.
You don't regret staying with me, do you? I don't want to get morbid today of all days, but it scares me. I don't think I can keep up this performance 24 hours a day.
Oh, you could keep this performance up for a lifetime. Like on the Orient Express. Like in the bar. Like chatting up the barman. Oh, I've told my husband this terrible lie. Not a little white one, but a big black one. Remember, Ange? Because I do, because I was sitting 4 feet away from you, lapping up every word. 6 little months to live. 6 tragic little months. And poor old Angie's gonna pop off. That has gotta be the sickest joke that you've ever played. And then what's fell for it? Well, now the joke's on you. This, my sweet, is a letter from my solicitor telling you that your husband has filed a petition for divorce. It also tells you to get yourself a solicitor pretty damn quick. Happy Christmas, eh?
I'm guessing she's coming back. She's the neighbour, isn't she? And I think that no one sort of breaking the fourth wall speech to camera, it is probably more than just a one-off. I don't know what other people think, but...
Yes.
We've had the Doctor Who EastEnder crossover before, haven't we? The Children in Need special. So it's not unheard of. The two universes might be connected. Andrea?
Hold on a minute. Are we saying that the woman who drops Ruby off at the church is I was going to say Mrs. Mangle. I'm on the wrong thing now.
You're on papers.
Who was the one that worked in the laundrette?
Dot.
Dot Cotton.
That'd be quite eternal.
She's the great-grandchild of Dot Cotton. Oh, sorry. Anyway, yeah. I'll need a top-up soon, anyway. Go for it. Who was first, Suki or Andrea?
Andrea.
I've completely lost my thread now, Deb.
Well, that's what happens when you start talking about Doc Cotton and June Brown and the actors. You know, you just start thinking about the time warrior and you think, that's what a cracking story.
Do you think that she knew what was going on all along? Because, first of all, I mean, the thing is that I think with Rani is Flood and Rain is Rain. Rani is an anagram of Rain. But it just may be that Russell T Davies is obsessed with waterworks and things. But do you think she knew all along what was going on? Because she starts off being scared, then she's shocked, and then by the end...
I don't think she knew what was going on. I mean, a police box appears. If she's got information on Time Lords and she knows that TARDISes do change shape and will be able to blend into the environment. So a police box appearing on her pavement, I don't think she probably thought it was a TARDIS as such. It's just something somebody's from the council messing around. And then when she starts complaining to Abdul. Now, a bit later on, when she's walking with the shopping bags and the TARDIS vanishes in front of her, that's when she realises what's going on. And that's when she recognises it's a TARDIS. That's when she starts sitting outside just to keep an eye on whatever's going on.
No, I think that's a very astute remark, which I agree with completely. But don't
Shocking.
You think it was
You're
a lost
actually
opportunity?
Agree with me?
Well, I thought, it's once a year. I've got to get it in. I think it was a wasted opportunity. She didn't say, "Oi, TARDIS, get out of my street."
Which that's is the wrong character.
No, she did say, "Get out of my pub." Didn't she?
No, that was wasn't that Barbara Windsor and Peggy?
Yeah.
Too much knowledge of EastEnders.
I don't watch EastEnders.
Stop watching.
I watched the first episode.
Go on, Andrea.
I was just going to say, I feel like the internet's kind of gone, been set alight by the idea of pond, river, flood. And I really want that story. I feel like that story's been left in the right place. I don't want that to be resurrected. But I think he's a bit of a master of misdirection, isn't he? And I think his series arcs are far more subtle. If you think back to Bad Wolf, like when you saw it all at the end, it was like, oh yeah, it's everywhere. But it was really subtle. And I think his series threads will be a little bit lighter. I think it'll be less obvious that it's building to something. I don't think it will be quite so heavy-handed, but I think it's a little bit of like internet baiting as well. It's like, what can we call this lady? Like, yep, that's the one.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that this is just, as you said, misdirection. I mean, why would she break the fourth wall and speak directly to the viewer and the camera? It's I think it's just a Christmas Day bit of fun to get everyone in a lava, and it's nothing's going to carry on from it. But I guess we'll find out, won't we?
Well, yeah. No, because if you've done your homework and actually watched Unleashed and... as I've just watched the commentary, she's back. Her story unfolds, but it's mostly about the story of who Ruby is. The whole series is going to have elements of finding out who Ruby is. But no, Anita Dobson's definitely back.
I know she's back, but I don't think it's going to be a call back to a big previous... I don't think it's going to be like River Song, or I think those threads are like, I think those threads are going to be left. And I think she was very much a Moffat creation as well. And I know she kind of appeared with Tennant, but she was very much built by Stephen Moffat, I think. And I don't think Russell will probably unpick that too much.
Is he not writing an episode or two though? Moffat. But the other thing, I mean, it said we will find out more about her, and it may be that she's a completely new character, but she clearly I've issues about whether the fourth wall should have been broken or not. I've just been googling about how many times it's happened before, and we know kind of the first Doctor did it, but shall I keep talking, or shall I let Suki speak? Yeah, all right, Suki. Andrea says I should let
you miss this. Yeah, Andrea, you missed this.
Oh, yeah. I've pined for it.
The fourth Doctor did it quite a few times during his reign. And Sylvester McCoy did it once as well, where he just looked up at the camera and goes, "I think I may have got it wrong." So it has been done a number of times by previous Doctors.
And the first Doctor. Happy Christmas, everybody.
Yes.
To you all. This has happened. So maybe this little bit was a nod back to that very first Christmas Doctor Who episode that they did with William Hartnell, where he did speak to the audience, and we have Mrs. Flood talking to the audience. I can see her coming back in a major way, Anita Dobson. I think there is spoilers out there again of future episodes if you, anybody wants to see. But I think her character is going to be something significant within Ruby's lifetime. Because my theory is that she's been there all the while just to keep an eye on Ruby's character, Ruby's upbringing. She knew where she was being brought up, and she just went into her life and stayed with her. A bit like where you had River Song's previous incarnation, Melody. I think it was Melody. She was with Amy and Rory as they were growing up. And she was there all the while. Basically, their child was at school with them. So this might be another way of doing it, like a Moffat thing. But RTD is now doing it himself.
I love the idea that she was obviously loving what was going on. It was kind of the Wilf thing, in a sense, as well. You know, that she starts being out there more and more. And in the end, she's got a thermos flask and a deck chair, and she's out there watching everything that's going on. That's who I want to be. You know, I haven't got long to go now to be an elderly lady, but I kind of like the idea of getting my little thermos flask and my desk out, watching all the my deck chair, looking at all what's going on. But I like it. I love Cherry as well.
Yeah, Cherry was great. But do you think, would you want to do it? Like sitting in your front garden, just staring at your neighbours.
Yeah, why not? Well, I mean, they'd have to sort of be a bit more interesting, but I could provoke things a bit, you know.
Well, you could definitely provoke things. Anyway, Andrea.
I was just going to say, like, Deb clearly lives in a far more middle-class area than me, because if you sat out in a deck chair watching your neighbours round here, they'd probably think you were grassing to the police and, put your windows out. So, you know, probably not advisable. What I was going to say, just coming back to kind of that bit I picked up on the other episodes, is something I did like, which I don't think we've seen for a long time, is I think sort of Russell is really good at grounding the companion in real life and giving them a family. And I think we saw that with Donna's family, and he kind of like pulled that thread again. And I think even like going back to Rose, he created that family kind of life around them. And I think that's something that's been missing for quite a while from Doctor Who to me. And I quite like the idea that there's like, that they're not kind of completely alone in the world, and they have people to go back to and people who worry about them and people who are kind of on the fringes of that lifestyle. And I think they did it really well with the Foster family. I love the gran, just want that bloody cup of tea. Like, I totally like feel her vibe. And I think it works really well. And I think it gives it a quality that people can kind of buy into the story a little bit more. I don't know. And I kind of think I'd be a little bit disappointed if we've got another companion who's the saviour of the Earth. I kind of just want them to be like a lost child who's been like brought by this foster family and is a really like normal, like not a kind of special space person. I think it kind of loses something. I like the companions to be really ordinary and grounded.
Yeah, definitely. There was a good old section at the beginning of it was almost like it switched over from Doctor Who, because there was no science fiction or anything going on. It was just the typical RTD kitchen sink drama stuff going on. And yeah, I totally agree. It's excellent. If there's one thing that he's good at, that he's writing these scenes and setting everything up so that when it does go fantastical, it makes much more of an impact, doesn't it? Because it started off, of course, with Ruby being interviewed by Davina McCall, didn't it? What did we think of that? About Davina in Doctor Who, Andrea?
I think it was Dave, actually, because he was sort of a regular sort of listener, who'd kind of got really invested in who's this Davina character, and are they going to be like a big somebody in the show? And it's like, no, they're just a UK TV presenter. So I think there was something probably wasted on those sort of non-British audiences there. But I felt like it was almost like a little Big Brother kind of callback to his first season. If everyone remembers, what's that episode called? Is it Galaxy?
Journey's End.
Space Station, what's it called? Oh, God, I've gone blank.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
And there was it was like a TV station, wasn't it? There was the sort of Big Brother series running there, and I felt like Death by Christmas Tree was a bit of a callback to Jackie Tyler, who on the phone frantically said she was going to be killed by Christmas trees. But I don't know. I'm not a big Davina McCall fan, but I think it worked in the context of the episode, because obviously that show that she does present is about sort of reuniting families and finding relatives for people. And my understanding is that they kind of approached the show and wanted to do it quite sympathetically. So,
no, I mean, exactly what you said. I think she did really well, because I didn't realise she's acted before, but she was all right, really. And she obviously, when you see her being interviewed, loved being there and really wanted to be part of the show and wants to be part of it again. But I thought she was great. They couldn't actually mention the name of the shows, but it was lucky that they got, you know, I don't know if they needed permission. It wasn't 100% accurate, because actually we don't all have a DNA data in this base unless we choose to be on the database. But it does suggest, I mean, the whole point of them, because they did their research and said they wanted to get it right, to say, no, there's nothing we can do because they're not on a database. What they actually say on that show is, well, people add, because every time you do a DNA search, I've done a DNA search, so I can be found on the ancestry.com. Unless you decide, so that what they say on the program is, well, people add their details constantly, so there may become, it may be in the future that we do find some more information, so we'll let me know, you know, because I managed to find who the illegitimate father of my grandmother was, but interestingly, I probably didn't put it very subtly when I tried to message the guy in, and he's related to Donna Noble, a woman called Donna Noble, which I mentioned last time, Andrea, that I'm related to, in America. So there must have been a point. I can see your hands up, and I guess this is the point that you're trying to make as well. You're going to make as well, is that the point of not getting that accurate is because she's not, her mother or her DNA is not on Earth. Something has become, or not on this timeline. God, Drew, because
I think Suki was before us.
Yeah, but he's spoken more than you for a change.
Yeah, go on, Drew. You carry on.
Yeah, I mean, it'd make perfect sense if Ruby ends up being her own mother in a closed timeline. Why, there's no DNA anywhere, isn't there? I mean, well, that's the obvious answer, isn't it? Yeah,
he'd have three legs and.
I do not think even, as I say, I don't think RTD will go there. The episodes that Andrew was thinking about was Bad Wolf, Parting of the Ways. Those are the ones that Davina appeared in as well. Like,
but can you name the planet?
It's a space station, wasn't it? It was like, I'm sure it was called something like Nine, or where they had all the TV shows on. Anyway,
wasn't it the one with the name that was about that long? That's unpronounceable.
No, it's called like the, it's called someone, one of our listeners in the comments will remind me. I could Google, but I'm not going to cheat. I think just kind of following on from that kind of that show about finding your family and things. Obviously, I work with a lot of kids who were in care in some capacity, work with a lot of children in foster care. I always cringe slightly at the kind of the Tracy Beaker model of it isn't residential care wonderful, because I kind of know what that reality looks like. But it was quite nice to see foster care being shown in a positive light, but also not that, you know, foster carers aren't necessarily every child's kind of forever home. And it was nice that lots of kids had been through those doors. And yes, Ruby had kind of lived there always, but they'd sort of supported, you know, kids for maybe a short time, maybe for a weekend, maybe for a few months or whatever. And I thought in terms of representation, I think that was quite nice, because I think I know a lot of kids who would feel seen by that. And I think it's good to have those positive role models who have kind of come through the care system, because a lot of kids in care don't have them. So I was quite pleased with that. I thought that was well done.
From someone that works in children's services, I agree. It was a lovely, positive message. I was sat here when it's a section 20. I was going, yeah. but I was a bit distraught that they said, oh, we're going to be closed for 3 days. Get on with it. I thought, no, come on, you've made the effort to research the Children Act. You should know that that has to be, I can't remember if it's 24 or 48 hour placement meeting, irrespective, which has to go ahead, which is monitored by the DOV, which they would have got into terrible trouble. Plus, there is an out of hours team. So Children's Services does not close. They put us in a very bad light that way.
That was something I was going to ask about, because the fact that I'm sure there's going to be incidents that happen where the child has to be removed from their family home. And it might happen over Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Boxing Day.
Yes, there is an out-of-hours emergency.
So when they said, you know, we're not going to be available, I think that can't be right. That cannot be right.
No, we've got to up the childcare workers here now. We do not close. In fact, I did a visit on Boxing Day, but then I did insist on time and a half.
Money.
Principle.
So yes, we've spoke about Mrs. Flood and we spoke about Ruby, but let's talk about the main man, the Doctor, because the clue's in the name of the title, isn't it, Doctor Who? What did we think of the Doctor then? He starts off disco dancing, doesn't it? That was a good start. Andrea?
I think when you look back to kind of the previous Doctors that Russell's written for, he kind of weighed himself down with that post-Time War kind of sad, lonely icon. And I can see why he did it, because it was a great kind of plot development and that's kind of moved on. I think he's very intentionally freed himself of all that past heaviness so he can write a really young, fun, fresh kind of Doctor and companion relationship. I think he comes across as very charismatic. I think in the bits you saw him in the previous episode, he very much held his own in those scenes. He's very likeable. He's quite infectious. And I think he's going to be really popular. I think he'll appeal to a young audience a lot. And as I say, he's dancing in the club. And you can see where that pitch is. It's like, this is going to be a much, much fresher, much lighter, much sort of less heavy version. I'm not saying there's not going to be any kind of drama, but I think he's very much kind of thought about who he's writing for, and he's unshackled himself of all of that previous kind of weight. And I think he got rid of some of that weight in the three specials, because he did sort of make that reference to the flux and all that, but he's left that behind with 14, I think. So I'm hoping it's going to be quite breezy and fun, particularly for this season. So I'm quite excited by that. I think that's something different, and I think it's something much needed.
Yeah, I've got to agree with that. He was light, he was fun. He seemed to be having fun at the beginning of this story. You know, he's dancing in the nightclub and he doesn't seem to have a care in the world. He also seems to be investigating. I don't know what it is. Was he following Ruby in this episode? Or was he just by chance he comes across whatever's going on? But I have a feeling it looked to me like they were just following her and making sure she was okay. So did anybody else pick up on that, Deb?
You're saying that the 15th Doctor's a stalker?
I am not putting it like that. I'm just thinking that he may have come across some part of his investigation or his little adventure that he was on, and Ruby just happened to walk into his path, and he's just making sure she was okay.
I know I'm old, but...
You're not old enough yet to be able to sit in a deck chair in the front of your garden, so you're not old.
A shit with a bottle of gin. In my flask. Assuming, right, that I was 19 and a fit man came up to me and who'd been dancing and said, are you clumsy? I wouldn't react quite the way, say, Ruby did. Are you clumsy? And you'd think, fuck off, for one thing. And then after that, you'd kind of go, tell me, yes, I am. What's going on? I'm having all these accidents. And then he says, it's much worse than that. And she's still smiling. And I'm thinking, I'd be shitting myself by now. What, is he a doctor? Has he found out I've got a brain tumour or something? is kind of... Anyway, that's the only thing that I've got to criticise. I think the Doctor, Chuti, is amazing. I love him. I love the energy he's bringing in. And I do... That's one of the things I liked about the idea that 14 retired is that his healing is coming into 15th Doctor. And so now we have a 15th Doctor that is really embracing life and has that energy and enthusiasm. And I think it's very captivating. I love him.
I was just going to say, I'd have read that very differently, because I think at 19, if the bloke who'd been dancing in the club had come up to him and, "Are you clumsy?" and he was that good looking, I'd have probably said, "Why are you worried I'm going to fall for you?" I would have read that as a 19-year-old, that's a god-awful chat line, but he's a very beautiful boy, so I think I probably would have forgiven it.
Yeah, he's so whiskey. Charming and good looking. I mean, that line would have definitely worked on me if he had approached me in the disco, 100%. Yeah, he's great. I was watching it. You was asking Suki about what we thought about it. I was watching it on rewatches to see, because he's not quite sure. Is he trying to keep close to Ruby? He does say at one point something about that's what attracted me to you, when he's talking about the coincidences and bad luck. I think he says, "Oh, maybe that's what attracted me to you." So there's definitely something going on there, isn't there? Plus, we got the very first scene. How does he get from the disco dance floor to catch a glass? So something a bit, I don't know, timey-wimey going on there, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, this is a time travel show. He might have just jumped in the TARDIS, realised just when, and then just come out just at the moment. Even so, it could have been in two places at the same time on the dance floor. One on the dance floor, one right by the table.
If he could have done that, then that would have avoided him going up to have to rescue anybody from the Goblin King, because he could have just got there earlier. In fact, the show could have been 10 minutes.
Isn't that one of them... I can't remember what the phrase is, like a definitive paradox. Point in time that you can't be changed, though, maybe.
But that's what he did towards the end of the episode. He went back in time to stop.
Yeah, but he was too late because they'd nicked her and he had to climb up the ladder and do all the dramatic stuff. But if he'd gone back in the TARDIS and got there sort of 2 minutes earlier, he could have avoided them nicking her.
Yes.
I feel confusing. Like Deb would write the most boring episodes of Doctor Who ever. I mean, it makes logical sense, but it would be really, really boring.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, if you use the TARDIS to go back in time to stop her dropping her glass, which is dead cool, I want the Time Lord just to be my gin and tonic inspector to help me avoid dropping gin and tonics on the floor. I might need one in a bit. But
do you drop gin and tonics on the floor? Are you clumsy, darling?
Andrea,
Oh, dear.
Andrea came to my house once. I knocked over two glasses of wine. You were going to get me one of those beakers with a...
The suppy beakers.
Yes.
I'm going to get one of them hats with a straw in it, I think. And then just move your head, it'll be fine.
Yeah, so the doctor. So we also had him at one point running across the rooftops, didn't we? Which was also out of the advert for this episode. And jumping onto the ladder. He's got the magic gloves of power, hasn't he? He's kind of like a bit of a James Bond character with a Q somewhere in the background.
Yeah, I've kind of written something about spy gadgets because I felt like the gloves, I think the bulletproof shield that he created with the sonic screwdriver, in one of the other specials, it feels a bit like it's a bit Q branchy, and I'm not sure how I feel about that. I don't know. I mean, can I complain? I mean, the A-team brought down drug cartels with cabbages. So, I'm down with this, but I kind of like a bit more of a... I kind of preferred the "I'm going to work out what all the ropes are saying to each other." That felt more Doctor Who than spy gloves. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought the other really good bit was the bit with the policeman when he followed him to the TARDIS and he said about, "Oh, yep, she's going to she's going to say yes. And he said, oh, what do you mean? And he said, oh, my sonics are picked up a diamond, so you must have a diamond, and that means you've got a diamond ring, and you're probably going to be proposing to a woman, and you're probably going to be doing it on Christmas Day, because otherwise you would have waited. You know, I like that. That's like using his intelligence, isn't it, rather than leaping about and using special gloves and that.
Because I just watched the commentary, which I'm sure anybody that listens probably has done all that as well. That was an extra part. You're shaking your head. That was an extra part that was written in, because when they did the previews, people said that they didn't see the Doctor soon enough because they were very limited. Shooty was still filming Sex Education for a lot of it. So they had to add in a lot of Shooty's parts afterwards. Incidentally, also the house, part of that was the same set as Donna Noble's home. But so it was an extra part that was added in. And at the same time, with the snowman and everything, he figured, I love that line as well, I've been snowmanned. But the bit also that they needed to introduce the sonic screwdriver, so they kind of used that as well. I'm getting geeky. Hold on a minute,
Didn't you call me a nerd in one of the previous episodes?
Yeah.
And that your whole reason you voted me as generic unit soldier was because I was a nerd. So there you go. I'm just thinking I might have an in for who I've got to vote for at the end of the episode.
You always vote for me.
Yeah, so now, but this time I've got a proper reason now. whereas before I couldn't be bothered to pick up anybody else. The commentaries you're just going on about, it's not available to everybody. It's only available.
Oh, I apologise. Yes, it is.
BBC iPlayer, BBC license pass, content only. So there's means and ways you can get around it, obviously from around the world, but officially it's not available around the world or on Disney Plus.
Well, there you are. It was an added bit.
Since we've kind of mentioned Red Shirt, I might be putting a target on my back here, but can I just say I'm a big fat no to musical numbers? Like, please don't. It makes us, like, want to cringe and die inside. I didn't really like Neil Patrick Harris dancing around to the Spice Girls that much. I found that quite cringy and uncomfortable. I think it'll date really badly. I found the Goblin song very unnecessary. And I'm really hoping they're not going to do that every week because they'll not like it. I know some people loved it, but I'm a big fat no to musical. No. Not for me.
Well, that was the bit of the episode when we got to that, and I was just like gingerly looking around at my wife on the sofa, and I could see her face like thunder. It's a polarizing choice, let's say, especially when actually the Doctor and Ruby started singing. I was like, oh no, they've really gone there. I'm gonna say though, I think that it was completely cancelled out by the next bit I want to talk about, Shooty's acting, and that's the dark bit of the episode. You already mentioned it, Suki, and your initial thoughts, where when Ruby went missing and all of a sudden the episode took a really dark turn and Shooty busted out his acting chops and was crying. I mean, it was a grim bit of the episode, but it was also, I think, you know, it was a great bit of the episode. So did that cancel out the singing bit and bring it back? It did for me.
Yes. Thank you for ignoring Deb there. Well done. So I didn't mind the singing. I really didn't. I quite like a musical episode. I'm in A Strange New World, Buffy. I'm quite happy with them if they're done correct. And in this context, this episode, I did not mind it at all. I mean, the goblins are all singing with a live band basically on the stage, because we had that earlier on as well. We had Ruby and her band live on stage. So people are all standing there watching and listening to them sing and dance or whatever they were doing. And then when the Doctor had to improvise to be able to work out which pulleys he needed time to do it, the only way was to keep the crowd entertained, which is the goblins. Kept them entertained, so he went into full showman mode and started doing the singing and the dancing. And he, I don't know how he knew that Ruby was a singer or a dancer, a musician, but he must have felt confident enough for her to be able to take on the music. Maybe he was stalking her. Maybe he does know about the music in the past.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned about the singing, camp is never wrong. But that's, you know, and Neil Patrick Harris, that dancing was just fantastic. And the way that sort of pop music can, he's done it before, didn't he, with Master. And anyway, that's it. Camp is good in my books. The darkness bit, it was really noticeable how the lighting went darker. And also there was blues. And as soon as Ruby came back, there started being the oranges and the warm colours and the lights and the Christmas decorations. And it was quite subtle and, well, I don't know about subtle, but it was gradual as Ruby wasn't part of the lights. And interestingly, Russell T. Davies said something about when she disappeared, she said, "Don't move." And that was why the mum was saying that why her life was different. And I kind of saw it as like a Christmas, it's a wonderful life moment, that this is what Ruby brought into the world, all this light and energy and love. And I thought that was fantastic and very moving.
Yeah, the darkness, it's that part of the episode really did stand out as a highlight of this story, because the way it suddenly turned, as Deb says, the lighting helped, because you all had Christmas lights, I think, on the wall, which is bright and light, and then it suddenly went dark. But the other thing that really helped was the acting, which was like Michelle Greenidge, who plays Ruby's mom. The way she went from her really, you know, "I'm happy to see this baby, I'm happy to do this, that and the other," and then she suddenly turns and you find out that she's such a lonely figure because she never had this young woman in her life. And I just think it helps having somebody like Michelle Greenidge do that acting well. If it had been a poor actress, it might not have come across as a really standout bit of the episode. But I think having good actors in there, it really helps the way the story unfolded during that bit of the episode.
Am I right in thinking that the crack in the ceiling didn't go away? I'm just thinking the crack in the wall, the crack in the ceiling, we've kind of seen that before. I think the crack in the ceiling remained, and I don't know if that's foreboding of some kind.
I just wanted to point out that Russell T. Davies did refer to it as Matt Smith's crack.
Yeah.
Here's an image. It did go away in the alternative timeline, but in the one that's when it initially happened in that timeline, it was still there. So, yeah, I'm not sure if fostering money counts for all insurance money, basically, counts for fixing that crack.
We're skint. We're not going to pay for a roof. And can you imagine insurance trying to convince, oh, there was a Goblin King? You know, they won't believe you when there's a thunderstorm.
I just wanted to mention the goblins a bit more, because I felt like it very much had Labyrinth vibes. And when they said we were going to see the Goblin King, I was really hoping for a hot guy in tight trousers, so I'm not going to lie. It might have made the singing more bearable, I think. Because I'm a bit of a fan of Labyrinth, to be honest. I'm complaining about singing, but I like Labyrinth. I was kind of hoping for a hot human Goblin King rather than that fat thing with a big slimy tongue. But I quite liked that it was a practical effect. And I watched The Unleashed about all of the puppeteers that kind of had to make that work. And I think it was the better for it. But yeah, I was a little bit disappointed when the curtain opened. I was hoping for some David Bowie type in very, very tight leather trousers. So that was a little bit disappointing. Sucky, you can follow that.
I can't follow that because I'm not sure if I wanted to see somebody in tight leather trousers. No, I can't go around mentioning names. But yeah, the practical effect of the Goblin King. Oh, superb, the way it was realised on the telly. I just think it is great. The goblins, I could take them here and there, you know, they were just the same same sort of with different clothing. But the Goblin King itself, well, that was really, really impressive to see. And a lot of effort taken into.
Yeah, and what do we think of the Goblin King's death being impaled by the church steeple with the Doctor pulling it down with them handy magic gloves again? That was a bit of a moment, wasn't it? No blood, though. I guess the supernatural creatures don't really have blood and guts, do they?
Not, yeah, not at family time viewing on Christmas Day. Sorry, Andrea, I interrupted.
All right. I was just going to say, I think the ship was CG, but I think it looked good. It was very Terry Gilliam, I think. It wouldn't have looked out of place in Time Bandits, which I haven't watched for a long time and feel like I want to now. And it was something a little bit different. I think the last time we saw a doctor and a companion sort of ascending into the sky to see what was up there was probably Victorian Clara and Matt Smith. So there's a little bit of a Christmas throwback there. It was a bit of fun, wasn't it? If you're going to do a Goblin episode, it's got to be at Christmas, really. You can't, you know, and I quite like the idea that goblins are to blame for all, like, kind of mishaps and...
Yeah, I want to ask about that. What's the exact motivation for these creatures? What do they want to do? Are they pirates? Are they going around taking stuff? Or are they there just doing mischief by ripping open carrier bags and pulling out lighting? I don't understand what the motivation was for these creatures and why they're now in this universe. Because from what I've sort of read behind the scenes, the Doctor, when he went forward into the future and brought these creatures back in, which is the Toy Maker, the Goblin King is maybe part of these creatures that have come from whatever this fantasy or alternative universe was, and they've all now shipped into our world, our universe.
I've got the impression that they kind of fed on bad vibes. You know, they were drawn by coincidence, but they also kind of fed on misfortune, that kind of fueled them a little bit. They like quite enjoyed that. I don't know.
I mean, dying
on coincidence, I wrote down.
Yeah, because that's why they was attracted to the baby, wasn't it? It's one of the things I a little bit had trouble with this. It's science fantasy, a lot of it, isn't there? Like the sailing ship going through the air and obviously goblins needing to eat babies and that is. But what do we think about the direction that's going in? I mean, Doctor Who's science fiction normally, isn't it? Rather than fantasy. It's definitely had fantasy moments in the past, but it seems to be ploughing straight into it with this episode.
Wasn't there a John Pertwee episode where he never left Earth? I mean, that was kind of neither. I mean, I suppose he had monsters and stuff. But no, I'm quite happy. So long as it's got a bit of a camp and it's fun and it explores ideas. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Science fiction fantasy is about taking us outside ourselves and looking at things in a different direction. To me, that's why I love sci-fi fantasy. I'm not going to quibble, really. Plus, I mean, you're saying it's not science fiction, but the Goblin King ship had Jeffrey's tubes. They might have been made out of rope, but they were definitely Jeffrey's tubes.
Yeah, why does a flying ship need ventilation shafts? I didn't quite get the that. Yeah, I was just looking at the ship and I was thinking, what's keeping it up there? Where's the engines and that? You know, that's kind of where I was coming from with that. It's just it was like, nope, we're not going to worry about any science in this episode. But you know,
it was the science of ropes. The ropes had their own language and science. Sorry, Suki, you had your hand up for
No, I was just going to say the magic bit is what somebody once said. I think it was in a Doctor Who. Magic was a science that you don't understand just yet. It is a science, but it is a science that you don't understand. I think it was in the last episode, actually. Go on,
Drew. Well, that's an Arthur C. Clarke quote, isn't it? Did he say... science is indistinguishable from magic to you know, to people who haven't got science, kind of thing. Maybe. But I liked, though, because we've moved on to the end with the Goblin King being impaled. I like the kind of symmetry on the episode, because it starts off with the church and Ruby's abandonment, and it ends with in the same time period, doesn't it? Because that's when all that is happening. So it's a good bit of symmetry on the beginning and the end of the episodes. Well, what did we think of that then?
The ending was okay. It just, I expected a bit more crash bang wallop for a Christmas episode. But apart from seeing the Doctor pull down a ladder, with his magic gloves, I expected a bit more crash bang wallop, a bit more action, and I didn't seem to get it towards the end. It wasn't climactic, even though the whole ship was destroyed. Maybe it should have been, but it wasn't. Go on, Deb.
There was still an element of their setting off the series and the new Doctor, I think. And to me, what was significant, you know, we are learning about a new Doctor. He is, you know, maybe more about impetuous love, I don't know. But the energy that he put into pulling down the ship, it wasn't just the gloves. There was real fight and a you know, physical and emotional energy in doing that.
Yeah, you're right there, actually. I'm just thinking, because he did say when he used it initially and then he used it a bit in towards the middle of the episode, he goes, oh, only 3%. Right, so maybe he just thought to himself, I need to put extra. I'm sure you must have read it somewhere there, Deb, from somebody else. So that other person was right and not you.
Bastard.
They must have been made by Apple, them gloves, mustn't they? How low the battery is. I mean, you can make these gloves that can transfer your mass into just them, but you can't develop a decent enough battery that after you've used them for 20 minutes, they're down to 3%. Never mind, though. Yeah, so then that leads us to the end, doesn't it? Back to the kitchen sink drama with the Doctor back with... So the mum, we keep...
Carla.
Carla, that's it. I know I had it written down somewhere. Yeah, back to Carla. Back, everything's back to lightness and happiness again. And Ruby moving on with the Doctor going into the TARDIS. I mean, that was a good ending to the episode, wasn't it? I'm the Doctor. Is that what he says?
Yes. during that scene, I quite like the fact that we had walking around the TARDIS, exploring it, the police box shell. And I quite like that, because we had that in the first episode, and I think we've had it since, in a couple of times since then. But yeah, having Ruby walk around is just like, it's like a familiar trope that you want to see in a companion's introduction episode. Have them walk around the TARDIS and what's going on. But then having Mrs. Flood be the one to encourage her to go into the TARDIS, and then having the Doctor just standing there going, I'm the Doctor. Good grief. We know who you are. We've just watched the whole episode.
Yeah, no, I just want to say that the way he stood on the slope with the barrier, and he was, you know, he was just that whole pose. It was so iconic and exciting, I think. And yeah, I'm the Doctor. Yes, I mean, that's it. This is about him owning that title, I think. And so that was for us. Yeah, I'm the Doctor. He is the Doctor. And I think that's the point. Also, interesting thing that he'd changed his jumper. I don't know why, but I was fascinated that he changed his jumper, but he put his jacket back on, so it must be really cold. It's nice that he's on energy saving run or whatever.
I would like to think as well, a little bit like sort of that first episode with sort of Christopher Eccleston and Billy Piper, for some people, this will probably be their jumping on point for the show. And I hope it is, because I think we need new people to kind of get involved and want to watch and support the show. But I definitely think there'll be a demographic that have come to the show because they're drawn to the cast. because it does feel young and it does feel fresh. And I think there was enough in there to give someone that, if that's your first episode of Doctor Who, there's kind of enough you can pick up to take away from that. So I think there was a little bit of that. So I really hope it was someone's first episode of Doctor Who and they walked away and thought, I really want to watch this show. So I think there's a little bit of that in it.
From what Disney have done, Disney, who was showing this outside the UK, they've only been promoted. No, they have sort of promoted the David Tennant episode, but they've gone out fully to promote this first episode because they know, as Andrew says, this is going to be the starting point for a lot of people around the world who are going to look at this show. And there's not going to be any other previous episodes on the Disney Plus site because they haven't bought them. So these guys will then just be able to start watching this afresh, see the TARDIS, explanation for the TARDIS, the Doctor, the Companion, and then just crack on when the new series starts. Going back to what Deb said a while ago, which was about why is it like in May, I think with this, the way things are going to be shown, you've got a Christmas episode, then 5 months later is going to be the series, 5 months later is going to be a Christmas episode, 5 months later. So there'll be a gap of 5 months each time. Now, this normally, I'll be quite happy with this, but there's going to be some disruption in if they're going to be showing it in May, June, July, in that in those months, there's usually a World Cup, a football tournament being played, a European tournament, a football tournament, and where there's games are scheduled at the same time, Doctor Who will be on. Now, the only way I could think of what, if they do anything different, is have BBC Dalgaran scheduling a football match or asked to put a football match on at the same time on a Saturday evening. And that's the only way they will have a continuous run of 8 weeks of episodes per series during a football tournament. But I don't know whether this is a BBC decision or whether it was a Disney Plus decision. I couldn't tell you.
Let's hope not, that it isn't a problem anyway. We don't want to lose support for Doctor Who.
No, so we've transitioned from Doctor Who to football there. So maybe it's time to be drawing an end to our deeper faults. Unless anyone's got any other points, Deb, you marginally beat Andrea by a second there.
Right, my notes. I just love the line "Doctor What," because I do. I think we haven't really said anything about Ruby. But Millie Gibson's only 19, and I don't know. I don't watch Coronation Street, but I just thought she was brilliant. Also, if you can see my notes there, I love. Can you now pronounce the name, Tree?
Shooty, I've been learning it. Shooty, 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 yes.
Great. That was me complaining about the children's act. I'm just wondering what people thought of the name Lulu Bell.
I love the fact that the Doctor's the only person who loves it. That was a classic moment, wasn't it?
That is definitely a Doctor thing. I also liked how he curtsied to the King rather than bowed. Recurrence of the word mavity.
Yes.
All the mass and density and mavity exists in the glove. So where are we going with the mavity? Also, I love the line about, as he's going on about coincidences and how they dine in coincidence. And she says, why do they pick on Davina? And he goes, well, that was just fun. Yeah, which I get. And the vocabulary of the rope and the science that is outside the sonic screwdriver. And also, it was very witty, I thought, the song. And I loved, because it's definitely scones. The line about scones, when it was immediately scones, came up. I've got two other points, but I don't know if Andrea wanted to do her bits.
Go on, just...
Well, one's a bit of an aside, really. They both are. One of the goblins was played by the woman who was Poe in the Teletubbies. So I like that. But also, I can come back to it. I wanted to do my Twitter dickheads of the week.
Crack on.
Yeah, go for it. Isn't it always time for that?
All right, okay.
I just have a quick one, which might feed into... Yeah. Because I did see some sort of general dickheadery online, and I thought people were going back to the Meep episode and complaining about, like, oh, it's full of trans people. And I genuinely didn't notice, but apparently one of Ruby's friends, who I think was very briefly seen in the band and then seen, like, and didn't have any lines in a taxi, and apparently that offended people. I'm going to hold my hands up here and say I don't take that much notice of extras, but it's clearly, like, pissed off the right people. So yes, keep going, Russell, I'm enjoying this.
She was the singer in the band, and she's quite a well-known actress.
Mary Malone, I think.
Mary Malone, that's it. And she does appear again, but all very pathetic. Yes, it does.
It wasn't enough of a plot point for me to, like, kind of even, like, clock that. So, but no. I was confused why people were upset about that. And I was like, oh, that's why someone was briefly on screen for 5 seconds.
And there's a trans man going to appear as well in later episodes. Yeah, that does kind of lead in. The Twitter dickheads of the week are the ones who decide that they won't support the idea of a gay doctor, and as far as I know, nothing has been said so far that Shooty is playing a gay doctor. He's camp, but then there's always been camp elements of Doctor Who, and he may well turn out to be a gay doctor. I don't give a shit, but the fact is, you know, people going, well, why do you think he's gay? And apparently it was the nightclub scene.
I felt there was a line about spending a hot summer with Houdini as he was kind of releasing himself from handcuffs, which I think people have probably read in a certain light. But my understanding that that's a reference, I think, to John Pertwee, who talked about knowing Houdini.
So did Jodie's doctor.
Yeah, I think people have kind of read what people want to read from that. And I think Russell's probably baited the wrong sort of people with that anyway. But yeah, I think people are, like, pouncing on lines and kind of overreading them maybe. But
yeah, several doctors have spent long hot nights with Houdini. It might have just been, you know, warm. But no, yeah, I mean, I don't care about the sexuality, but it's just interesting. When also there were people who, because one gay person said, well, I don't like it, have now decided that all gay people don't like the new doctor. So that is my award of Twitter dickheads of the week. There's a lot of them, though. Yeah, the trans people doubtlessly will come back. The trans hate, you know, transphobics. Yeah, Suki.
The gay doctor bit, I mean, Jodie was sort of, with Yaz, so if Shooty is a gay doctor, he's not the first.
This is what I don't understand. Are we all ignoring Jodie, or is it just because she was a woman? We've already had a gay doctor, haven't we?
Yeah.
Did
Andrea?
They actually have a relationship, though? Or was, oh, sorry, Andrea.
I was just going to say there's a certain right-wing male demographic that, like, hot lesbians don't count, so, you know, just bear that in mind.
Well, they never existed legally, did they? Whereas it was illegal for men to have sex, they just didn't talk about lesbians. It's best not thought about. Or perhaps the men did think about it and they thought about it too much.
Well.
So has anyone else got any points I'd like to bring up? I'd like to say good to see the 94 bus in there, wasn't there? It might be a bit of a London-centric bit of excitement there for me, but I thought it was good.
Yeah, it was in Bristol. Sorry.
Had to blow it. Burst your bubble there.
Okay, well, if we've done with our deeper faults, shall we move on to our lights out of 5?
How many lights you see?
Yeah. Oh!
I asked how many lights you see.
So who should we have first? Should we go for you, Deb?
I think we should go for Andrea first.
Okay, who should we go for first? Should we go for Andrea?
Andrea. Oh, sorry. Did you want to sound slick and get that edited?
Always.
Go for it.
I like
go
to,
for
yeah.
It, don't worry about it. This is just...
Who should we go for first then, Drew?
Let's go for Andrea, shall we? What's your rating for this episode?
So it's quite difficult because I think I'm going to rate it as a Christmas special and in comparison to other Christmas specials. And I'm going to be honest and say there are some god-awful Christmas specials, which I would probably only get 2 lights on a good day. So as a Christmas special, I'm going to give it 3.5.
Okay, interesting. How about you, Deb?
6.
6 out of 5. That's good going.
We're not doing that.
No, I love, I completely agree with Andrea that it was a Christmas special. If it had been in the middle of a series, I probably would have thought a bit cheesy. But for Christmas is about, you know, the spirit of Christmas is about cheese tack and silliness. And I think it set off a distinctive new Doctor. Very, very excited. I think Shuki is amazing. And even David Tennant, I'm a huge David Tennant fan. I didn't pick up on his Doctor as quickly as I have Shuki. To me, this is exactly the Doctor we need and at the moment, full of energy and love. Love, yeah, brilliant. 5 then, if you won't let me.
5, yep. I was just going to double check that. Excellent. That's good. Suki?
As Andrew said, this has got to be a Christmas episode and you've got to judge it as a Christmas episode. But at the moment, because I'm in the euphoria of having a new Doctor and quite a fun Doctor, and the companion seems great as well, the introduction of her, I can't give it as a Christmas episode, but I'm going to give it as a wonderful episode to introduce both a new Doctor and companion. So I'm going to give this 5. I mean, this has been like a broken record for me. I've been giving 5s for all the specials, and now I'm giving 5s for this Christmas episode as well. Maybe in a few years' time, when I have to review it again for something else, I might be able to pull out all the flaws as to what the goblins are doing, what was everybody following. And if the whole Mrs. Flood storyline just fizzles out and it's terrible by the way it ends, I might give it even lower score then. But at the moment, I am giving it a 5 out of 5. Go on, Drew, what do you think?
Well, I really enjoyed the episode. I thought it was good. It's got its flaws, and yes, maybe it was the Christmas beer. I'm tempted to give it a 5 as well. Yeah, let's go for it. 5 out of 5.
You know, you're just saying about the Christmas beer. In previous years, when there used to be Christmas episodes, I used to drink and I used to get blind drunk. And so half the time when I was watching these Christmas episodes, by the time the episode turned up, I'd watch the beginning and then I'd be asleep for the rest. And I'd end up having to watch it at about 11 or 12 o'clock at night. This time round, I sober and I watched it up until Shuti and Ruby got onto the pirate boat. And then I fell asleep because I was knackered. Ended up waking up after all that had happened. And the pirate ship had gone away. And then I watched the whole of the episode. Then my daughter came in because I watched. And the first showing was my son. Second showing was with my daughter, which was like an hour later. Ended up watching it again. And then as soon as Shuti and Millie came off the boat, I fell asleep again. So I ended up missing a whole chunk of the episode a second time around. And then I decided to watch the commentary on the same night. So 3 times I watched this episode. Not completely, but I have watched it 3 times. And the 3rd time I was watching it, but I had all the commentary going on. So I wasn't picking much up. And I never made any notes during all them 3 times, but I was just knackered. Anyway, that's my tale of Christmas Day.
Bit of a kitchen sink drama from Suki. Yeah. But yeah, I got to agree. You can't have too many beers before New Who, can you? Because it just gets all a bit emotional and the tears start leaking out, definitely. I always try to avoid that as well. Only 1 or 2, and then you can watch it safe. So should we go on to listeners' feedback? Okay, so Jack McMurrow has to say about The Church on Rose Street. In a sentence, this episode had its faults, like everyone before it, but the keyboard warriors are up in arms here. Wonder why. I assume it's because the Doctor is not played by me or one of favourite Northern actors, Jodie Whittaker. Fun fact, Jodie and I have the same birthday. Not yet, but close enough. I wonder why the sonic screwdriver regenerated so soon after it regenerated from Jodie to David's. Especially given it looks now like an early 2000s DVD remote taped together. The new David TARDIS is still here. From a production point of view, the new set looks way more expensive than a new Sonic. Really enjoyed the fairly fast-paced plot. A welcome thing in new Doctor Who, and this and the performance of Shuti Gatwa and Millie Gibson, whose birthday is 2 days after Jodie and mine, make me want to see further adventures. An ideal introduction to any era of any show. I'm disappointed that while nothing groundbreaking, the Goblin Song didn't become Christmas number one. Still, missing the top spot to Last Christmas by Wham is no bad thing. And while I'm mentioning her, I guess RTD has a thing about reviving Doctor Who with a 19-year-old character called Rose. Overall, I give it 4 out of 5 stupidly massive DVD remotes.
Oh,
thank
well
you
done,
for
Drew.
That.
Well done, Drew, for reading that out without any mishaps. Well done. Well done.
Yes. Yeah, we haven't actually spoke much about the Sonic, have we? What do we think?
It's a bit of a TV, like old school TV remote, isn't it?
Yeah.
Those big buttons, like I think my mum and dad would appreciate this. Like they'd be able to like work it.
It'd be a good sellotape dispenser.
I've looked at it and I just thought, I'm used to the long cylindrical versions of each Sonic screwdriver, and having what looks like a squat device in your hand, it just doesn't feel like a screwdriver to me. So I've got to get used to it, but it doesn't seem to have all the bells and whistles that David Tennant's doctor had, where when they had the screens and all this stuff. So maybe they're just saving the budget for an episode where they can utilize it properly.
I like the fact that it's got a Rwandan proverb in Gallifreyan, and yeah, it's new, isn't it? It's all right.
So back to the feedback, should we go to Suki for the next one? Jennifer Lee Rossman?
Yes, Jennifer Lee Rossman. And they say, I didn't think it was possible for me to love a Doctor more than 10, but I'm pretty sure 15 is going to be my new favourite. He's just so dang charming. Cute too. Doesn't hurt to be cute. Can't wait for all the adventures in his wheelchair-accessible TARDIS. Thank you for that, Jennifer.
Lovely. Deb, do you want to go next?
Did it start on He Does?
Yes.
He does the Richard Simmons thing where he looks at everyone he meets like they're an angel descended to Earth for the very first time, and he's so lucky to have the chance, and I can't wait him to meet people in time and also space. I love that. Well done, Jimothy.
Lovely.
I love that. I'm sorry, not well done. That sounds a bit patronising. I love what you've written. Anyway, I think that's fantastic. It just, yeah. Do you think the wine's kicking in now?
I think it is, yes.
I love what you've written. It's awesome. Thank you.
This is exactly why I don't drink before watching Doctor Who. Andrea,
Before recording the podcast, Neil.
Yes, very good advice.
Hey, I've been working this week.
As have we all.
No, we haven't.
I haven't been working.
Oh, my God.
Anyhow, back to the show. Andrea, do you want to take the next one from Raider Lee?
Yep. So I've got Raider Lee. It was at Raider_Lee, who says it was rather good and the haters will hate even more, but we don't care. Neither do we. Thank you for that, Lee.
100% not. So we've got Tom Turlow next, and they have got to say, it was quite good fun. Shooty was likeable, Millie was likeable. The plot was typical RTD Christmas episode fare. Fun, but fairly inconsequential. Ugh, I knew I was going to trip on that. Inconsequential. Sets everything up for the new season. 3 TARDISes, or is it tardy out of 5?
Tardi.
Mm. There we go. Thank you for that feedback.
Can I do cat?
Go for it, Debs.
Because I love this. Have fun with the podcast. No opinions from me. I know not of this Doctor Who.
I've replied back to her and I says, basically, what? What?
Doctor what?
Yeah, I've just... I'm going to send her some recommendations to her to watch. Some
recommendations? Yeah. Is that in a... You're going to fly to America and download the episodes for her?
The air quotes that you just did, I will be doing that. I shall make sure I go over there, give it a physical media rather than download stuff for her.
Do you want to do the next one, Suki, from David Paul Morgan?
Yeah, David Paul Morgan, who actually replied on the Around the Console podcast, but because they don't do the feedback, we nab theirs. So and he says, that was quick, a pretty good Christmas episode.
Lovely, short and to the point. So, Andrea, have you got some extra feedbacks?
I have. So, as regular listeners will probably be aware, I've been trying to create my own Trekkie with minimal success. We haven't really got past Arena, but there is a Gorn figure now with his own rock and everything. But we haven't done too well on the watching. So I thought I'd try with Doctor Who, and I've been slightly more successful. So the very brief but says a lot review says, the Doctor Who's were great, really enjoyed them. Goblins, now I know what to blame for everything. So I feel like I'm being more successful. I think this is the tree I'm going to bark up a little bit more because I'm trying with Trek, but it's a slow process. So I will keep you updated as I try to build me own nerd.
Excellent.
I woke up this morning, put on my red shirt.
So, well, we are now on to our generic unit person of the week. And there's back to 4 of us now, isn't there? It's going to be a bit more difficult to each vote for each other unless we can really synchronise it like swimmers or something. So should we start off with... Let's start off with Suki. Who are you going to vote for as your generic unit person of the week?
So, you know, previously I've said I can't be bothered to think of anything really bad to say, and I've always just picked Deb because I couldn't be bothered. Now, she had a go at me last episode or the episode before, and she called me a nerd, and she said all sorts of really nasty things about me and made me cry. The wife was really upset as well. The kids were all having a go. You know, we'll go around and have a go at her. And this was about to escalate before I calmed them all down. So I am now because she's now outed herself as a nerd herself, and she's caused me all this grief over the last few weeks. I am now actually having to vote for Deb, you know, for all the stress and the strain within my family that I've had to do. So poor Deb, not poor Deb. No, what am I saying? Poor Deb. It's not poor Deb. It is definitely Deb for my vote.
Go on then, Deb. You want to retaliate? Who's your vote for?
Well, I tell you, I'm heartbroken because what?
So was my wife and kids. They were heartbroken as well.
Yeah, but what you misunderstand is nerd is not a negative comment in my books.
So why did you vote for me last time?
Oh, because you're more of a nerd than I am. I was just jealous.
Oh, hey, jealous? I don't mind you being jealous. I don't mind that. Hey, I'm happy now.
Felis catus is your taxonomic nomenclature and endothermic quadruped, gregarious by nature, your visual olfactory and auditory sense contribute to your hunting skills and natural defense. I find myself intrigued by your surprise. Come on, this is nerdish.
That was nerdish. You're still getting my vote.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm not going to vote for Suki because bless him. I mean, how could you? He's just our own little goblin. And yeah, he means the world to me, and I'm so gutted that I've upset him.
I'm not used to this. So, please stop. Please stop.
I'm going to vote for Drew because you said you had no notes. Oh, no, you did have notes, but you would, yeah, you would host it if you had to. And then you did a... I know we keep nominating each other for being brilliant, but you had completely prepared what you were going to do. You had a complete order. And yet again, we've been shown up. So, yeah, true.
Okay. All right, shall I go next? I am going to vote for Suki, I'm afraid. Like, there's two reasons here. Number one, bringing his family into it now. Is that where we can go with this?
You do bring your cat in, Drew.
Not into who we're going to vote off each week, though. God, he's really tugging at the heartstrings there. And plus, you know, it was Deb's turn there. He's interrupting her a lot. He's doing a Deb on Deb.
She does it to everybody else. Drew, I'm interrupting you now. She does it to everybody else. All right, it was fair play or fair game on her. You know, I've got to do it. So yeah, and bringing family into it, I didn't have to bring family into it, but because I was so upset on that day, right? They could tell how upset I was. I had to bring you back onto the podcast. Now she hadn't upset me, I wouldn't have voted for her.
Yeah, so as I say, Suki's getting my vote. Andrea, do you want to sort this mess out?
I feel like I've got the deciding vote here, don't I?
Yeah.
It's difficult because I feel I'm concerned now because now me and Deb have matching Star Trek hats, and I'm worried that if I nominated, I could be accidentally caught in the crossfire when someone thought it was Deb, but it was me in the same hat. So that's something to consider now, I think. You know, I've got to have a bit of self-preservation. However, I feel like Deb did just refer to Suki as a goblin and nobody commented.
Did she?
She said he's our very own goblin. And I feel like just for that, I feel like Deb's kind of, I'm going to run the risk of being accidentally shot as a Deb lookalike and I'm going to nominate Deb.
It was a sign of affection. I like goblins. Yeah, apart from Suki still... No, I voted for Drew.
Working out.
That's,
let's see that cog's wording under that alcoholic daze.
I was going to let her out of her misery. So that is two for you, Deb, I'm afraid, because Suki voted for you as well. So how are we going to dispatch her, Deb? Go for it, Andrea.
The hand goes straight back up there for Andrea.
Consumed by the Goblin King while the three of us sing a jaunty song.
Well, that's all right then, yeah. So I'm going to be,
Eaten. Yes.
I don't know. That enormous tongue, it could be an interesting experience.
Okay, let's move on then. Yeah, so that's how Deb's going to be dispatched this week. Well, there's worse ways to go, I guess. So I think all that remains now is for us to sign off from Trek This Out. So you've been listening to Trek This Out podcast, and we have covered Doctor Who Christmas Special, The Church on Ruby Road. Let's say goodbye, everybody.
He's so slick, isn't he? You know, the way he just ends that.
You should have voted for Drew.
I should have voted for Drew. Yes. Bye, people. Love yous. Bye.
Just going to get a pint of wine. Hold on.
Go for it.
Into the vortex.
I have the whole universe at my fingertips.
Oh, this is deep.
You can't!
Abbey Road, steer the nose!
All right, let's take it from the top.
Ruby, there are powers beyond the universe.
Are you getting scared because you're just babbling now?
Ah, smell faster!
No job, no boss, just fun.
Classic.
I'd love it if you came with me.
Thank you for listening, and you can find us all
on Twitter. As a group, you can find us on at TrekThisOutPod, or you can go to our Facebook page at TrekThisOut. Just Google that. You can find me on Twitter as Sidemount_151.
So you can find me on Twitter as at Vintage1983V if you're into Star Trek shitposting and a lot of other thirst. If you particularly like to follow me Star Trek art, have a look on Instagram for Vin of the Basement.
And I'm just Lufdee, L-U-F-F-D-E-E on Twitter. But if you are interested in knowing our obsession about Jason Isaacs, you can find me, Kat, and Andrea posting weird stuff about Jason Isaacs. Hashtag Team Basement.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as 23BDI.